Your parents own you as a female until you get married, and then your husband owns you. Yeah. That's it. So if I leave, they're going to take me back to my owner, whether it's my husband or my father. This guy was a lunatic. He had guns and weapons and swords, and he would beat the shit out of me, rape me every day. I literally was like, okay, I'm either going to die, somebody will kill me, or I'll kill myself. Holding on to grudges and holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Be your own hero. Like, don't wait for something to happen. Don't wait for someone to come rescue you. Do the work. Yeah. Be your own hero one day at a time, one baby step at a time. You don't have to do it all at once. It doesn't happen overnight. But now the answer to that question for me is I would do yoga. Even if I had $10 million, I would still do yoga. I would teach yoga. I would create, you know, my programs, my yogic programs. I would just spread the yoga, you know, to as many people as I can.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. You can help me by being the best version of yourself and truly do something with your life because it's so worth it. Today's guest is a refugee from Yemen who had a brutal upbringing as she was forced into arranged marriage twice. I mean, all the situations and all the suffering she had to went through, like death-threatening situation, being sexually abused, and so many things. It's like something that no one should ever have to go through. But Maha Bodhi, she survived. She came to America, and through yoga, she healed herself. And now she helps others to heal as well. She's of service to others and just such a giving woman. So I can't even express how grateful I am that she came on the I Love Success podcast and share her journey. And don't miss this. So kick back and listen to this because you can learn so much. Let's go. Welcome, Maha.
Thank you.
Who are you really as a person?
As a person, I'd like to think of myself that I am a person just like any other person. I had my struggles and I had my journey and through suffering and a lot of heartache. And then I took that and learned from it and grew from it through the pain and tried to transform the pain into healing. And then now I try to serve others and show them how healing is possible. For me, it was through yoga, but necessarily doesn't mean that everybody has to. There's no one right way to heal.
Yeah. Can we start with Maha back in Yemen? You were born in Yemen, right? Mm-hmm. For people who have never been to Yemen, can you just talk a little bit about that country and like your upbringing there?
Yes. So I wasn't actually born in Yemen. This is just a little detail that I want to bring up because it will make sense when I say my story. But my father was a diplomat. So his job was to move every 4 years to a different country on a diplomatic mission and work for the embassy. So I was actually born in Russia, in Moscow. Yeah. So he was there working at the embassy. At the Yemen embassy. So I was born in Russia, in Moscow, but both my parents are originally from Yemen.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate that my father was a diplomat because I did travel a lot and I saw what's going on outside of Yemen. But still at home, it was a very Middle Eastern upbringing where women are groomed to, their purpose in life is to just get married and serve their husband and have as many kids as they can and just, you know, cook and clean and just be there for the man. The man is everything. He is the king. And the woman's job is just to be a good wife. Yeah. So I was actually groomed for that. Like, education is not important. Anything else, you don't need to have dreams. You don't need to have a voice. You don't need to have an opinion. All your purpose in life is to just be prepared for when the husband arrives.
Who told you that?
That was the norm. That was what everybody else was doing. All my friends, the people from Yemen are doing. All my friends at school, my parents, my mom would be like, you have to cook, you have to clean, you have to learn. And I never liked cooking. I don't know why. I never got into it. And she would lock me in the kitchen with like with the key and I'd say, you're not going to leave the kitchen until you make something. And I would sleep on the kitchen floor, refuse to cook anything until they give up and like unlock the door and I walk out. So I was always...
Strong mind.
Yeah, I was always a rebel.
Why did you have a strong mind, you think?
You know, I honestly don't know why. It was something inside of me rooted, even though I didn't have any female role models. Like, I did not see, you know, a different version of what a woman can be other than a wife. Yeah. But I always wanted more. I wanted something different. I wanted to be free. I just wanted to have options, even though I didn't even know what those options are. But I just wanted my life to be beyond just serving my husband.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting what you say that people, like, women grow up in Yemen. Is it still like this in Yemen?
Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. So how, but all these little girls must have dreams, right? Didn't you have dreams when you were a kid?
It's interesting because their dream is to, like, get married and have kids. So
all girls dream?
Like, no, I wouldn't say all. I'm sure there are other girls that want something different just like me. But the majority, that's just, they don't see anything else beyond that. It was very closed and very strict. And it was back in the day, like, before, like, the internet and the cell phones kind of, but when I was a little younger. So really, that was all that we were seeing around us, especially at home. But then because of my father's job and because of the traveling, I did see something different. I did see other women being different, and I wanted that. I was very curious about what that is, but there was fear instilled in me because it was very strict. My mom was very violent. She was brutal. She was so mean. Oh my God, she would beat us so bad, so hard, like bleeding. She broke my jaw once because I was crying too loud, and she cracked my jaw, and she's just extremely violent. She would go on rants and would take like the extension cords, you know, for the electric extension cords, and that was like her favorite weapon, and she would just like whip us until like we bleed. And especially me, because I was outspoken and I wanted more, and I would challenge her, and she was just really focused on me, and it was tough. It was really tough.
Yeah. So let's talk about like how, when you were forced into marriage twice, right? Mm-hmm. How old were you when you, I mean, how did that happen? Did your mom come home and say you're getting married, or like how does that work?
So it's very interesting. It's kind of like a business there. Yeah. So I start to get older. I hit puberty and I started to become a woman. And in my teen years, and then people, it's arranged marriage. So families get together and they kind of shop around, like the parents of the prospective husband go and like check out who are the eligible girls. Yeah. And they just start to socialize and they start discussing it just like a business, if it's like a good partnership or not. The bride and the groom have no say in this. It's
so just, the groom is also forced into marriage.
They're not forced. They're more like, oh, mom, you go pick a wife for me. Like, because they don't. So there's no social scene. There's no dating scene. There's no other way than this way. So when they're ready, they're like, all right, mom, go shop for a wife for me. And then the mom goes around and scouts out girls and their family and sees if it's a good fit. Yeah. So then my parents started to notice that I was getting a lot of attention. So they were like, oh, this because there, when they get a man's family or him or his family, they pay like a dowry for to get married. Yeah. So they pay the female and her family.
Yeah.
So they were like, wow, this could be a good opportunity. She's getting a lot of attention. Let's wait for the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And he came. And he came and he was a very wealthy, wealthy man. His father at that time was the prime minister of Yemen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were like a big deal. And so my family was so excited, and my mom came and she showed me a picture and she's like, this is your future husband. That was it. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I remember that I cried and I was like, threw the picture away. And I was like, I'm not doing this.
How old were you?
I was 19. I was like, I don't want to do this. And they were like, no, you're going to do this. And that was it. There was no discussion. And I was sobbing on my wedding night. And it was a big, fancy wedding in a giant ballroom in a fancy hotel, 500 people. And I am sobbing down the aisle. And everyone saw it and no one said or did anything. Because it's very common that this happens in Yemen. It's just like, oh, it's okay.
Like, it's like she'll, a sage.
Yeah, it's like she'll get over it. It's fine. She'll get used to him and they'll fall in love and it's going to be okay. Yeah. And that was it. And I got married. And I remember on my wedding day, I would look around the house trying to find a way to escape. I was looking at the windows. I'm like, if I crawl out the window, like, but then I was like, where would I go? Like, I'm in Yemen. So in Yemen, you can't, like, there's no police that you're going to go to. There's no one. No one will support you because if a woman leaves her husband, then she's a whore, she's a slut, and you need to go back and be a good wife.
What happens if you leave? Is that a crime or like?
I mean, almost a crime. Like, they will punish you. You will be punished and you will be dragged back to your husband. So think about it as like the slave movies that you guys watch. Like, I was enslaved. I had no say anything. Your parents own you as a female until you get married and then your husband owns you. That's it. So if I leave, they're going to take me back to my owner, whether it's my husband or my father.
And how does that feel as... How did that feel?
I did not know anything different back then. That was my norm. That was my reality. And that was what was happening around. Now, when I look at it from this lens, from Maha today, from the American Maha, it's like mind blowing to me, like how crazy that was. Yeah. So then I stayed with him for 30 days. Yeah. It was the worst 30 days of my life. It was horrendous. I didn't want to sleep with him or have sex with him. I would lock myself in the bathroom all night and sleep on the bathroom floor just to avoid him. And then I just couldn't take it anymore. And I was like, I cannot do this. I'm like, do I go back to my mom? She's going to kill me. Or do I stay here? And I just could not do it anymore. He really was like trying to like seal the deal and consummate the marriage. And I could not imagine myself doing that. Yeah. So I just left and I went back to my parents, and my parents were so furious with me because I brought shame to the family. Now I'm a disgrace. So they locked me up in my room like a prisoner for 2 years. I'm not allowed to leave my room. I'm not allowed to see my sisters that live in the same house with me. I was losing my mind because I'm not talking to anyone. I'm like in prison, like in my room. No friends, no cell phone, no TV, no nothing.
What did you do?
I swear I was losing my... I don't know how I survived. Now when I think about... I remember that I would start like really like hearing voices in my head and I would start just like... It was starting to get like intense.
Yeah.
And then another... I got divorced and that ended and I was being punished for 2 years and locked up. And then another guy came in and proposed. And it was kind of like a miracle because now I'm like damaged goods. Like no one wants, you know, a divorced woman there. It's like the worst thing you can imagine for a female. But somehow this guy came and he's also very wealthy. His dad was like the second hand for the president at that time, super wealthy. But his dad was in the military, so they owned a lot of weapons in their house. Everything you can imagine, like machine gun. They had a tank in their backyard. And so I ended up marrying this guy. I was actually hopeful this time. I was actually, oh my God, I've been locked up for 2 years. Maybe this guy will be nice. Yeah. Maybe he'll love me. Maybe I'll be okay. Yeah. And he was, oh my God, like the first husband was an angel compared to this guy. This guy was a lunatic. He had guns and weapons and swords, and he would beat the shit out of me, rape me every day. He would leave the house and lock all the doors and ask me to stay on my cell phone the whole time while he's out of the house so he knows what I'm doing. So I'm on the line with him for hours while he's doing his thing. And then one day I fell asleep because I was just tired. It was late at night, and he was calling my name, and I didn't respond because I fell asleep. And he came back. Oh my God, he was choking me to death. Like, I thought I was gonna die that night. I was like, okay, today I'm gonna die, this is it. Guns, he took the sword and he put it in my neck. Like, he was very dramatic and theatrical. He's like, I'm gonna cut your head off. He would grab the machine gun and put it in my head and he was like, confess, what were you doing? Why were you not answering me? And I was like, okay, this is it, I'm done. He was kicking me, it was everything you can imagine. And then that was it. I was like, I somehow made it. He didn't kill me. And I woke up the next morning and I sneaked out of the house and I left. I went back to my parents' house. And I was actually hesitant to go back to my parents' house because I was like, I'm going to go back. They're going to lock me. So which is worse, like stay with this guy that is beating me and raping me and eventually he's going to kill me? Yeah. Or do I go back to my parents' house and be locked in my room for the rest of my life? Probably. Like, I don't know. But I just went back and I told them what happened. And he started to come to my parents' house and shoot with a machine gun at my parents' house. And he would like break the glass of my bedroom window. And so then my parents were scared for their own safety. And then somehow, like, I truly believe in miracles. My dad got assigned to go to Romania because he's a diplomat. Yeah. It happened at the same time when all this madness is happening. And he's like, okay, I'm going to go to Romania. Come with me. And I'll just take you there because this is getting out of control. So my dad took me, my mom stayed in Yemen, she didn't want to go, and my other sister stayed in Yemen. I just went with my dad. It was just me and him, and we went to Romania. And that's when the transition began to happen. Yeah. He enrolled me in school, in college, because I was in Yemen, I was locked up, I wasn't going to school, I wasn't doing anything. So he's like, go to school instead of like just sitting at home doing nothing. So I went to college. And then I started to see my Romanian friends and how their life is. I still had a curfew, 9 p.m., and I'm in my 20s. And if I had a class at school that starts late after 8 p.m., I'm not allowed to go to that class because it's too late for a woman to be outside of the house past when it's after sunset. And I had to be accompanied. My father had drivers and stuff. So I always had to have somebody with me guarding me the whole time. And just not guarding me, but like knowing what I'm doing and where I am and reporting back to him the whole time.
How does that feel?
I mean, honestly, I was just so happy that I'm in school and I'm like not in Yemen. So I was fine with it. But now I'm like, oh my God, it was suffocating. It was so suffocating because I would see and we're in college. They're dancing. They're going to nightclubs. They're having a good time. And I can't. Like, I can't do anything, any social activities, any just living a normal life. I can't. Yeah. Do that. And I remember I would sit in my room and our house was like right above like this park and they were always parties at this park. The Romanians, like, they know how to have fun. Yeah. And the music, you'd hear like, and I'm just like in my window just looking. I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could go and party. Yeah. Like, oh my God, that sounds like so much fun. Yeah. And I'm like, that's it. I'm like, that's my life. Like, I can't.
Yeah. Like everything that happened to you in Yemen, how did that affect you? Did you ever blame yourself?
Yes, because that was the voice in my head. That's what I knew. There was something wrong with me. I was a bad girl. I was a slut. I was a whore. I wasn't a good wife. And I'm not a normal girl like my sister, like my cousins, like my other friends from Yemen. So I did feel that I was... You know, there was that shame that I carried with me for a very long time.
And yoga helped you with that?
Yeah.
So we're going to get to yoga, I think. But yeah, let's... Mm-hmm. I really want to hear your story. So what happened in Romania and what happened after that?
So then in Romania, so we stayed there for 4 years. I went to college. I went to business school. I graduated. And then it was time to go back to Yemen. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot go to Yemen. I literally was like, okay, I'm either going to die, somebody will kill me, or I'll kill myself. And then my friends, the Romanian friends, were starting to apply to grad school to come here to the United States. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is my key. So I started to apply for graduate school, and I got accepted, and I convinced my dad. I lied like a million lies to convince him. I'm like, you don't just buy me a ticket. That's all. You don't worry about anything else. I don't need money. I told him I got a scholarship. Yeah. I was like, you don't have to pay for anything. And it's just 18 months and I'll be back. I promise. I made it like so easy for him to say yes. And he was like, okay. He finally said yes. And then I came and I just remember like at the airport when the plane landed, I was like, oh my God, I am free. It was so overwhelming to me that it was kind of scary. I was like, wow, no one's going to call me. There's no one watching me. There's no one, like, I can do wherever, whatever I want, go wherever. I'm like, wow, like, it was cool, but also scary because I never developed those skills to make my own decisions and you know, just very simple things. I like, well, where am I going to live? What am I going to do? Like,
yeah, it's a lot of questions to answer. I'm curious, how did you get a therapist? Was that hard for you? Did someone help you to get a therapist? Or because I know there's a lot of people going through a lot of things that are afraid of asking for help.
Yes.
So I'm just curious, how did that step come for you?
I was struggling a lot, like extreme struggle. I didn't know. I had so much going on. I had my student visa expiring. Yeah. So, oh my God, I'm going to student's visa expire. I'm going to have to go back to Yemen. That's going on. I need to find a job. I need to make money. I need to pay rent. And everything was just falling apart because I was freaking out from the inside. And I just reached a point where I didn't have money. I didn't have any income. I didn't have a job. And I was going to lose my apartment because I can't pay my rent. And I was just losing my mind. And one of my friends was like, maybe you should try therapy. And she gave me a name of this clinic that they're free. They don't charge. And she's like, just try, go there. And I went and that was it. And we started talking. It was very helpful. I did therapy for years. It was extremely helpful because I did need therapy at that time. But I feel yoga actually really like healed me in ways that like therapy reached a point where it was like, okay, like, you know, there wasn't, they medicated me and I hated the medication so much because it would just numb me.
Is that the ones that you get addicted to?
Antidepressants. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many people that are addictive to those.
Yes, they're highly addictive and they don't do anything. They don't heal you. They just numb the pain. And then your body starts to get used to it and then you have to increase the dose. And then you're just fogged and like the whole time, it's like sleepwalking through life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hated that feeling. I really hated that feeling. And I'm like, this is not what I want to, the person that I want to be in life. And then yoga like just opened me in ways and healed me in ways. And it's hard because you have to do the hard work and you have to face your inner demons and you have to go to those places inside of you that you don't necessarily want to go. They're unpleasant. But the only way over it is through it. So,
yeah, that's true. The only way over it is through it. I love that. So when did you realize you started with yoga and when did you realize that this can actually help you?
I just started to react to challenging situations in life in a way that was different. I started to be reactive and I started to be more responsive and observant. And yoga teaches you that. It teaches you how to be calm in difficult situations. When you're holding the pose for a very long time and you're sweating and you're in that pretzel pose, you know, and everybody's around you, you know, and it's just you just learn to breathe through it and know that it will pass and you will come out of it stronger than ever. And you start to apply those principles to your daily life and daily situation.
Yeah, it's like I started yoga, I think I don't know exactly how long ago now, but it was after my grandfather passed away. And then I saw this sign because I usually train hard. I'm a martial artist. So I've done martial arts since I was a kid. And then I saw this sign, yoga, and I always wanted to try that place. Mm-hmm. So I went there to Yoga Nest in Venice and it was so healing in a way. And now I can't stop, you know, it feels so good.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And talk about this journey with yoga and what it have learned you. And
so for me, my teachers, Brian Kess and Travis Elliott and Govindas, these are great, incredible teachers. Their voice when they were guiding me through my class, it was a nurturing voice that I never heard before. It was a new kind of way of talking to me that I've never heard before. Like, oh, just hold yourself with compassion. Be kind to yourself. I'm like, I've never heard that before. No one told me be kind to yourself, you know. No one, the first time I was with a healer and she was like, can you say I love you to yourself? Say I love you, Maha. And I started sobbing like, oh my God, I've never said that to myself. And if you ask me, do you love yourself? I'd be like, of course I love myself. But like, no, do I, is my, the voice inside of my head, is it a loving voice?
Yeah.
Am I kind to myself when I mess up, when I make those mistakes, when I, you know, I don't say the right things? Like,
yeah.
Am I torturing yourself and beating myself up to death, or am I being kind? Because it's interesting. This is what I learned. The voice of your parents ends up being the voice in your head.
Yeah.
And yoga taught me to change that voice into a loving, kind voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you nice to yourself now?
I am. So through my teacher, so I practiced yoga for 10 years with all these incredible teachers that I'm very fortunate to have access to. And then I decided to take it to the next level. I'm like, this is time. You know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yeah.
So my teacher, Travis Elliott, had a teacher training, a 200-hour teacher training, and I just signed up. And the first day I walked into that studio, to that teacher training, I knew that my life will change. I felt it. I felt home. I felt this is a language I understand. And I just, I knew that this was what I was meant to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how does it feel now to be a teacher and help others?
It's so blissful. It's so almost euphoric and nonstop, like it doesn't go away. Like, you know, like before you'd be like, you'd have good moments and not so good, but now it's just like pure bliss, like all the time, no matter what's happening. Like there are challenges in life. It's not like, oh my God, life is amazing and beautiful all the time. There are challenges, but I have the yoga inside of me and it sustains me and it keeps me centered. And my purpose is so greater than any obstacle that no matter how, you know, what the obstacle is, my vision and my purpose is so great that it's like my North Star. I know where I'm going. I have a sense of direction. I have a sense of purpose. And when I hold that seat of the teacher, when I'm in class, no matter what happened before on my way getting there, I am in a different world. I am there to serve. I am there to help people heal. And that's my goal.
Yeah. And what do you want to say to people that are listening to this right now that have been through something that is really traumatic for them, but they are angry. Mm-hmm. They feel resentment. Like,
well, I think Oprah was the famous one. She always says that. She's like, holding on to grudges and holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. So what you're doing with the grudge and the anger that you're holding on to, you're actually participating in your suffering by holding on. So I remember I was talking to this girl and she was telling me, she's like, you're in charge of whatever it is that you're feeling. So I'm like, how am I in charge? She's like, you participate to your suffering. I'm like, how am I participating? You know, I was still in that victim mindset. I was like, this happened to me. Like, how am I participating? She's like, you're participating by holding on to that grudge and still, you know, being in victim mode right now, this day, in this present moment, even though that happened a long time ago. So you're going to drag this for how long? You have to let it go.
Yeah. And you, Maha, talked about visualization and like sitting and breathing. How would you, can you share how a person can do that very, very easy at home? People that are listening now, what can they do to start this meditation or visualization?
Yes. Very simple. Like, don't overcomplicate it. And really, like, if you're sitting in stillness, then you're doing it right. If you have one moment of silence in your head, then it's like a push-up for your brain. Yeah. So you've accomplished that. So just sitting still in a nice, quiet place, turn off your phone, turn off any notification. I like to burn some incense. It just makes the environment smell better and it just uplifts me. And then just sit in a comfortable seated position, either cross-legged or even on a chair. It's totally fine. And just close your eyes and connect with your breath. Just notice the breath coming in and out from your nose. And you check in, and whatever, it could be scary, whatever is revealed to you, if there's tension in the body or tension in your mind, and just be with it. Instead of trying to fix it or change it, allow it to be. Allow whatever arises to be, and just so you're working with yourself instead of working against yourself. So be like, I see you, I see the pain, I see the tension, I'm just going to sit right here and breathe. Yeah. That's it. It's very simple. It's simple once you get it. It's hard in the beginning, but it's just like a muscle, like any other muscle in the body. You don't accomplish it from the first time. You don't do one push-up and get in shape right away. Yeah. And you don't get in shape and then stop. Yeah. It's a practice. It's every day.
And how long do you do that for?
I do it for a long time. I try, when I'm in a rush, I do 30 minutes a day. When I'm really feeling it, I do like an hour. I enjoy, it's my favorite time of the day. It's like, for me, it's like I'm downloading inspiration in that stillness. I'm downloading all that inspiration. And then when I'm ready, I get up and I, you know, manifest that inspiration in my daily life.
And for people who have never done it, how much do you have to do to feel an effect?
Start very simple. Yeah. Start very 10 minutes a day. Yeah. Even if that's too much for you, 5 minutes a day. When I used to work in the corporate world, I didn't have a lot of time. I would go into a meeting room and lock myself and just put my hand on my heart and close my eyes and sit there for 5 minutes. Yeah. And it would make a huge difference.
Yeah, that's magic. You know, putting your hand on your heart. Yeah. I learned that from one of my yoga teachers, Sarah Falugo. Mm-hmm. And put one on your heart and one on your belly and just close my eyes. It's so, feels so good. And like, I know, I usually try to do that in the morning.
Yes.
And just think about a couple of things that I'm grateful for.
Yes.
And just try to start that day, you know, in a positive manner.
And it's so empowering that you hold the key to your happiness. Everything you need is inside of you. How empowering is this? I don't need to go anywhere. I don't need to have a lot of money. I don't want to need to see anybody. I don't need... It's inside. Everything is there, right here. Just so tap into it and just, you know, enjoy that blissful feeling.
But how do you become a friend with yourself? There's so much, like, it's so difficult sometimes, right? Because there's so much going on in the mind. And how do you start loving yourself?
Yes, it's very interesting. I say, think about what would you say to your best friend if they're going through whatever that you're going through. If somebody comes and tells you, I'm feeling this, I'm struggling with, are you going to be like, okay, stop this right now and stop thinking, you know? Or are you going to be kind and be like, it's okay. Like, you know, take it one day at a time. Just breathe into it. You know, let's go have a cup of coffee. Let's go for a walk. Be your own best friend. Nurture yourself. Spoil yourself. I wake up, I know this is cheesy. Yeah. I wake up every morning and I'm like, good morning, mama. Yeah. You are awesome. Like, let's have a fabulous day. I mean, it works for me. Yeah, exactly. Why not?
Yeah. No, I love it. I know as a martial artist, I had so many people helping me to become good at that. And that's why I want to give back with doing this and like helping people to go after what they really want. So I only have one more question, Maha, to you, and that's something that I ask all my guests. And that is, after listening to this, we want the people that have been here with us today to take action in their own life. So if they could do only one thing to get closer to healing or to go after their dream, what would be your best tool for that?
I would say definitely find that thing that excites you. Yeah. Write it down. Have a goal. Be very specific. And every day, take one little tiny step, one action to bring you closer to that goal. Yeah. And of course, you know, if like yoga and meditation, I was going to tell you that all your listeners can have access to my online program through yogimaha.com, and they'll have a discount code for 15% off. I love success. Just type it in and you get that discount.
Perfect. So where do they go?
Yogimaha.com.
Yeah. And they type in I love success.
Yes.
Perfect. And you get 15%.
Yes.
That's amazing. And the summary you said with write down your goals, it seemed like you read my book because you summarized that perfectly. Shameless plugs. We're doing. But I'm going to give you one right now after the podcast.
That. Thank you.
Thank you, Maha. Once again, I can't say enough.
Thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure.
The honor is mine. I truly say that. And I'm so grateful that you came here today and open up, and this story will be here forever to help other people to change their perspective and also find the light in the darkness, right? And so, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you everybody who listened to this and who had the opportunity and honor to hear this journey of Maha. And if you liked this story, if you learned something from this story, there's only one thing I want to ask that you are going to do for me and for Maha, and that is to share this story with someone that needs to hear this so they also can learn and share and grow and make a better life, because we want people that are happy, that are going after what they want, and that are passionate, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's it, guys. Thank you,
and talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.